use of having no past. This woman loves you for years. Hey, Macron, the pet, will run you some set. Just had to take care of your boys. You must raise more produce, far more sense than a use, just to save all your worries and toys. No use of having no fears, no use of shedding no tears. This woman lasts you for years. Well, the red, white, and blue, that represents you. You ought to do everything that you can. Buy war saving stamps, young men go to the camp. Be brave and take a stand. No use of shedding no tears, no use of having no fears. This woman lasts you. Don't let trouble sometime all upset your mind, so you won't know just what to do. Keep pushing, keep shoving, don't be angry, be loved, be faithful and honest and true. No use of shedding no tears, no use of having no fear. This woman lasts you for years. Can say yes or no, but we got to win this war, because gentle MacArthur's not a friend. It won't be enough chaps to shoot a little game of craps, because the biggest of them all will be dead. No use of shedding no tears, use of having no fear. This war may last you for years. This war sure do bother our mother and father, our sisters and brothers too. Dear friends and relations, this was in creation. Don't let this worry you. No use of shedding no tears, use of having no tears. This war may last you.
How does criticism affect you as far as like being an autobio creator, where it's like people are like kind of like say something?
I feel like most artists have to have very tough skins. Mm-hmm. I don't take criticism that hard. I don't seek it out. I mean, I don't. If I went on the internet and tried to read every review of Spent, and there were some negative ones. You know, depending on who writes, I mean, I've read a couple of negative ones already, and you know, my reaction was like, oh, these people are, you know, their tastes, they're not my kind of readers anyway. You know, they're probably like more mainstream in their tastes, and they don't really understand what it is I'm trying to do, and you know, that's fine, but I don't know. I am very happy with Spent. I'm happy with the art and the. Just the craft of it, you know. I'm happy with like the lettering's nice and clear, and I'm happy with how it reads.
One thing I like looking at it in, like, I sat down and read all your stuff over a couple of days, is definitely the progress in the cartooning style.
Oh, thanks.
Like, it's, you know, it's always been great, but it seems like each book there's a definite switch in styles.
Yeah, I did get simpler, but everything in Spent except for the lettering, everything is inked with a brush, a very tiny, tiny brush, and it was very hellish. And I want to just ink with markers now and make it easier on myself, but I feel like the art will take a drop in quality.
Neil Adams uses Sharpies.
Yeah, I'm horrified when I see Neil Adams originals. it's like Dick Giordano, when he was inking him with a brush, that was the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even like Bernie Wrightson. You know, these are guys I worshipped when I was a teenager. Bernie Wrightson's artwork on Swamp Thing, you know, thrilled me at the time. In the first 10 issues.
Yeah.
And like other stuff I've seen, I'm just like, ugh, like it just hurts. You
it's
know,
more
like
recent work.
It hurts. To look at somebody's work and think like they peaked and then they declined. You know.
Yeah. Well, Bernie Wrightson's a perfect example of that, because I'm, like yourself, a huge fan of his early stuff, like the Frankenstein book, the creepy and eerie stuff, and then he does these Batman stories, and it's just like, it's not the same creator.
Yeah, well, he's got to make a living. But, yeah, but even his Batman and Swamp Thing was better. But it's a question of time and effort, you know? Like, he was lavishing, you know, a beautiful brush line on his early issues. That, you know, he's just not putting that time, or maybe he doesn't have that control anymore. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But he
was incredibly prolific then, too, which is the funny part. And now he's not so prolific.
Yeah, he was young. But it's
those young kids.
It's frightening, the energy of, like, somebody, you know, someone in their 20s. An artist in their 20s is, you know, the hunger and the excitement and enthusiasm, it's, you know, it can get all beaten down in you. You know, life can take its toll if you let it. It's rough. I don't listen to me like I know what I'm talking about.
None of us do, and that's the fun of it. We all make it up.
But, you know, he probably had children. He probably got married and had children and had mortgage and all that. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, kids.
Yeah.
I have a cat. I love my cat. I'm getting a weird look from Colin. Just kind of a juxtaposition between the work of Bernie Wrightson being this, you know, really finely tuned early work, is one of your, you know, you're very vocal about your love and have been pretty important in the creation of the Frank King collections.
Yeah.
And then that's like kind of the example of the opposite, where someone in time just got better and better and better and just more experimenting, doing more with his work.
Yeah. Well, King was kind of... I'm not really familiar with his work before, like, 1918. But, when Gasoline Alley started, like, in 21, you know, he was kind of like George Harriman. He was already great right at the beginning, mm-hmm. it seems. And,
well, he'd been cartooning for, I guess, a dozen years at that point or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, Chris Ware will tell you he loves that earlier stuff more than, like, the later stuff.
Yeah.
But he did evolve.
Well, when
I like it all.
When I was reading the Gasoline Alleys for our interview with Chris Ware and G.T.R. on it, the first volume, I thought I was going about halfway through, and it was like, these are 80-year-old jokes about cars.
Yeah.
And then this baby shows up on the doorstep, and the strip just changed completely.
Yeah. It's true. My favorite period, well, maybe not, I don't know if it's my favorite, but I'm really fond of the early 40s, like 41, mm-hmm. where Skeezix leaves home. He graduates high school, and then he moves into the big city, and he gets a job on a newspaper, and he just has to, you know, he's left his girlfriend Nina behind, but he's kind of still in touch, but he still wants to kind of play the field, and he's just feeling independence for the first time. And he's managing all his own money, and he's counting his nickels and dimes every night. And I really love that whole period. It's very scratchboard heavy, like lots of blacks,
mm-hmm.
where he's just scratching into it in the background, and it's gorgeous work. It's very different than his work from the 20s. I'm just talking about the dailies too.
Yeah. See, I'm familiar with obviously the first 6 years of the dailies. I'm more familiar with the Sunday strips.
Yeah.
From that wonderful massive tome of a collection.
Yeah. Yeah. The large, the oversized book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I
which was from your collection, from what I understand.
A lot of the pages. Well, some of them. I think 25 pages I contributed. That I lent to Peter. I don't know. I've been in LA for like 4.5 years now, and I didn't bring any of that stuff with me. Like all my books and Gasoline Alley Sundays and dailies, everything is in my dad's attic. And it was a great feeling to just, you know, kind of like pretend I didn't own anything. You know, so I moved out here, and I'm, you know, I'm in a room with just the only books in this room are the books that I bought in the last 4 years. And I don't know. It's been a very different life that I've lived out here compared to Toronto.
The minimalism.
It's much more minimal. I've you know, I spend my days. You know, I wake up around noon. I shower, and then I go to the library, and then I ride my bike around for a few hours. And then, you know, it's beautiful and sunny here. You know, I go to coffee shops and I read, and I meet friends for lunch, or you know, I'll draw strips. I have a jam sketchbook going that I'll do strips with people, and I see a lot of comedy shows at night. I have a lot of friends out here. You know, I didn't have as many friends in Toronto. Yesterday, you know, a friend of mine works at a movie theater. I saw that movie Juno, and about a pregnant teenager.
I love Michael Cera.
Yeah, it was great.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, and like a week before that, I was actually at a midnight comedy show, and Michael Cera was sitting right behind me. You know, it's a very small world out here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And like nothing surprises you. I just talked to a girl. A friend of mine called me this morning, and she works in a restaurant, and she got complimented by Bill Murray last night. You know, he came in there, and she was surprised at how old he looked, and she said he looked like a saltine. You know, but he was very nice. But he was with some like 20-year-old babe. You know,
yeah,
single guy, single old guy dating some young girl. It's you know Bill Murray's face was just you know how sad looking he is. It's just interesting, you know.
Yeah, the Hollywood lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm not even like living any kind of Hollywood lifestyle though.
No.
I'm living like in a very small neighborhood with just a few friends and I. Without a car, you know. I'll go, after this conversation, I'll go to the library and I'll check my stupid MySpace account. You know? But it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting because I'm emailing, you know, I really just email with the same few people. Mm-hmm. I don't really email with a lot of people. But with my friends, you know, I email them almost every day. So, you know, for like an hour, I've got to like very quickly get like a few emails typed and sent off.
So it is possible to live in L.A. without a car?
Totally. It's especially when you have nowhere to go.
Ah.
Like, I have nowhere to go. Where do I have to be? You know? I would like
library?
To be, you know, and everybody else has a car. Mm. Just like everybody else has a cell phone. Like, I don't have a cell phone either. I just, whoever I'm with, I'm just like, can you lend me your cell phone for a second? You know, and people just hand it to me, and I'm... But it's not even that often. It's like I don't have calls to make.
No. Now,
you know.
A couple more questions with Spend. The choice of colors, green.
Yeah,
what's about green? Is it that kind of that envy thing that kind of stood out?
Those two greens were. They're not exactly the kind of the greens I wanted. I wanted a more olivey green, but I'm still very happy with those two greens. If you ever look at the McSweeney's book that Chris Ware edited,
mm-hmm.
there's the colors that are actually printed on the hardcover book itself.
Yeah,
those are kind of what I wanted, but I've always loved Chris Ware's always used this kind of like turquoise green that I like in a doctor's office on the walls. It's kind of minty, but grayish. You know, I've always loved those greens, and I was very happy that I could like finally recolor those pages. And I hated the red. The red I used on those four issues of Peep Show, it was like a huge mistake that I had to just continue it just for consistency. But I chose red in the beginning because of this cartoonist in Canada named Doug Wright. His work is really great. He worked back in the 70s. He did like a newspaper strip called Doug Wright's Family and Little Nipper. And in his artwork, a lot of single gags, single panel gags, he would drop in red just like on the boys' shirts or, you know, very strategically. Kind of like Peanuts. When you see Peanuts, like those little Hallmark books,
mm-hmm.
The way Peanuts would sometimes be colored with just one color on the shirts and stuff, and it was usually red. I always loved that. But yeah, it was just a huge mistake, and I didn't know what I was doing. And later, I realized I needed a darker color for the backgrounds. Like wherever there's a shadow on a wall, I needed a darker tone to set that back even further and to obscure the cross hatching. So I was very happy when I, you know, could use two tones in the collection. But yeah, I never thought I was going to solve that problem. Like I part of the reason I didn't want to work on it either. Oh, in the last issue was because I really didn't know what to do about the coloring, you know. In terms of the collection.
And I should just make a note that Drawn and Quarterly will be doing a Doug Wright collection.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, Doug Wright's he's great.
So how much time did you spend in Canada?
I was in Toronto. I moved to Canada in around this time in 1987. And then I think I was in Montreal for 3.5 years. And then I was in Toronto for 13 and a half years, I think.
Wow. And was that because of a relationship?
Yeah. I moved to Montreal to live with Trish. I moved there, like, you know, 5 or 6 months after we met in the summer of 87. And then Trish went to an animation school right near Toronto, so that's why we moved there. And then I met Chester and Seth, and then we broke up, and I stayed there. And, you know, Chester and Seth were, you know, the greatest teachers and, you know, friends in the world, and still are. You know, I totally benefited from being around them. So I was in Toronto for 13 and a half years until I couldn't take it anymore. I had no other friends really except for those two guys, and I don't know. I really felt like I was living the same day over and over again, and I just couldn't take it after like 13 years. So I felt like I had to leave. I was looking for like any excuse to leave, and at the time, I met a girl that was living in New York, and I was going to go live there with her, but then we broke up. And so I ended up coming to L.A. instead. But this will all be in my comic.
And the
it'll be clear.
The short-lived HBO possibilities.
Yeah, I don't even think about that. Yeah. It was the HBO thing was just a complete coincidence that that I needed somewhere to move to. Like, I moved everything to my dad's house. The girl in New York broke up with me before I could move to New York. You know, before we could get a place in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And then I had to move somewhere. I didn't want to go back to Toronto again. So I had a friend, my old college roommate lives out here, you know, and HBO showed interest, so I just moved here. But HBO was like, just the whole thing was a fiasco. Like, it was all the wrong people. And, you know, all that will be in my book as well. But... Yeah.
It's just for me, when I think of Toronto now, I always think of you and Seth and Chester together.
Well, thank you.
It would be really disappointing for me to go to Toronto and you guys wouldn't be together.
Yeah, well, I may move back there. You know, I may be destined to move back there. I'm not sure. I'll stay in L.A. Like, I'm sort of pursuing a TV deal still. But it's got to be with, like, the people I want. I've got, like, a few dream directors that I want to work with. And if they won't do it, then I don't want to make some crappy show. And all the rights are back in my hands. HBO only had the rights for, like, a year. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. I experienced the panic of, you know, possibly having a horrible show made based on my comics that, you know, I'm very relieved it didn't happen.
With a laugh track?
Yeah. Like, I'm just so relieved that, you know, like, the shows that I really love are, like, you know, I love The American Office.
Mm-hmm.
And I want something that feels real and but very funny, you know. But it's tough. I'm not really up on shows anyway, but... The shows that I really like, you know, like The Office or Arrested Development.
God bless Arrested Development.
You know, I want something like really, I want them to be really, you know, well made, and I would have to surrender control because you just do, you know, I'm not going to write like 22 episodes of a show in 1 year.
No,
and I also don't want to. Anything that I'm going to put in the comic that hasn't appeared yet, I would never, you know, just give to a TV show, because just not owning a piece of, not owning the property, it's hard for me to care anymore anyway, you know?
It must be hard, because in some ways, it would be really interesting to see this development of a TV show, but at the same time, it's something that's really personal and private in a lot of aspects, too.
Yeah, you know, I've said this before. Like, I recently met with this one production company that made the Jackass movies, Dick House, that Spike Jonze and Johnny Knoxville and Jeff Tremaine started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a meeting with this woman, and I was like, you know, if the only reason we even talk about doing film, but, you know, the only reason I'm even talking about film or TV is because there's money in it, you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even care if it wasn't about the money. I would just stick with comics. But
there's no money in comics.
There is no money in comics. It's terrible. but I've sort of come full circle in terms of, like, I was very pissed off at that, you know, that there's no money in it, but now I'm sort of resigned to it. It's just hard, though. It's just hard to, like, resign yourself to the fact that, like, you're never going to have a house or, you know, anything, really.
Yeah.
Any kind of wealth of any sort. And
unless you're Robert Crumb.
Yeah, well, yeah, even that, well, you got to work hard.
Yeah.
I don't make excuses. God knows I don't work hard at all. But, I don't know. I'm going into whining mode now.
Where's the spleen in hand?
But, wait, what was I going to say? Something like healthcare, too. You know, as you get older, you worry about these things. And, mm-hmm. and I also feel like women judge me more. As I get older, I feel like I'm being judged more and more for my, you know, material worth. Because it sure as hell isn't my physical attraction. You know, like, I'm like 44 now, and I don't know. I just feel like, God, I'm babbling. I'm really babbling. I just feel like, you know, I'm 44, but I'm like still chasing after or looking at girls 20 years younger than me, and I feel like they're seeing it like an old loser. You know, like this guy's like, you know, still living like he. I am still living like I was 20 years ago. You know, still eating the same kind of crappy food and living the same cheap lifestyle.
But then, you know, go back to what we said earlier about, or what you said about Kenneth Branagh and celebrity, and, you know, 20 years pass, and where did it go?
Yeah. But what's hard is that it's, you know, I am older. I'm not, you know, I'm not young anymore. And it's, I don't know, it's disturbing.
but you have been getting into things like you were talking about meditation and Buddhism and such. That's an area of personal growth.
It is, but I don't know. I don't know what I was going to say. It is, but it's sort of like realigning your I don't know, your values or what your plan was. Like when you realize. It's kind of like, you know, I could never afford a car, you know, so I've never actually wanted a car either, though, mm-hmm. you know, but I can't be sure, like, what came first, you know, like if I had money, would I want a car? Would I want a computer? Would I want any of this crap that I don't have now? And I don't think I would, but, you know, same with, like, I don't know, relationships, oh, God, I'm babbling. Cut all this out. Cut this out.
God.
I need a blast of oxygen. I don't know.
I'm gonna change topics then.
Okay.
Kind of, you know. Fair Weather. What was the decision to do that book? Like, it seems like completely separate from everything else you've done.
The decision was really based on, you know, I'd finished The Poor Bastard, and I didn't want to slow down in terms of, even though I did. I did want to go right into another project of a book, and since I just finished The Poor Bastard, I really didn't have anything. Nothing had really happened in my life. I was really just single for, you know, a good 5 years or something, and I don't know. I thought I would do like one kind of wholesome childhood book that I could dedicate to my mother, and I was also loving Chester Brown's The Playboy, and I Never Liked You. Mm-hmm. I liked how he revisited his childhood, and I like seeing his, you know, just his storytelling with silent panels. Like before I did Fair Weather, I mean, Chester had already drawn, you know, panels of pages, not pages, but he drew a few silent panels of just himself biking around. That I thought were very powerful. Like his use of silent panels always struck me as like incredibly powerful, and I wanted to, like, try doing something more, quote, cinematic or...
It was something different you're trying to capture in the story.
Yeah, or trying to tell the story differently, like at a kind of a leisurely pace. Like in The Poor Bastard, there's just a lot of quick cutting, and I'm very focused, or I was very focused in the storytelling about, you know, just my emotional state and pain was kind of directing me, you know, as to where to go with each scene. Like the next, like some scenes are just like a single panel. Other times you might have like a two or three panel scene, you know, but it all was very instinctual. And I don't know. I think with Fairweather, I just wanted to try something more contrived and more like a, like I said, kind of cinematic, but more, you know, something wholesome.
Yeah. Wholesome's kind of like the perfect word there.
Yeah. And I also, you know, I never planned on being unprolific. I never planned on being lazy. Ideally, I wanted to think of myself, you know, like Woody Allen or Hitchcock, one of these guys that, you know, I mean, these guys, they each have like 50 films to their credit, you know? Like, Woody steadily has made like a film a year at least.
Mm-hmm.
And as did Hitchcock, and I don't know. Just
but at the same time, Kubrick has, you know.
Yeah, but I wasn't thinking about Kubrick. I was thinking about, you know, I think about people like Charles Schulz and Frank King.
Yeah.
I think about these guys at work every day, and you know, when my life is over, I don't, even if I have 10 books to my credit, it still doesn't feel like much.
Well, you know, I kind of see something different, though, because there is a kind of different generational thing, and, like, we're talking about Chester and his work, like, he was probably cartooning how much longer than you? 5 years?
Maybe, yeah, maybe 5.
Yeah. He doesn't have a big wealth of stuff when you think about it.
Like, I know, but...
yes,
because I've been a bad influence on him.
Hey, you're not there right now. Where's his latest book?
I know. I watched Chet crank out 10 issues... Well, I watched all those... You know, all the Underwaters, you know, 11 issues of Underwater haven't been collected. You know, all the Bible stuff hasn't been collected.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to collect all the other Happy Clown stuff again.
I know.
And he won't.
It's just a complete story, and it's incomplete.
He's maddening, you know? He's working on this thing he wants to work on now, and he won't collect these other things. But Chet was, you know, I watched him do 11 issues of Underwater, then I watched him do 10 issues of Louis Riel. So he's always been hardworking, but Blue, you know, the last issue of Louis Riel came out when I hit 4 years ago, or 4 and a half when I left Toronto. He had already finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he hasn't had a single issue out since then. I mean,
and he hasn't, I think he only started his latest project like last year.
Yeah.
Or this year.
Yeah, and even his latest project, he did like 26 pages or something before he decided to scrap them and start over. And you know, I just talked to him the other day for like a few hours, and even without the Happy Clown, you know, before he it came out as like 7, or no, wait, I think it was 9 issues that came out, you know, 9 small issues that he reprinted it as like last year.
Which was basically the old 14.
The old stuff, but with beautiful new covers.
Yeah.
But even then, like he was redrawing. He started redrawing like the entire Ed story from the beginning. Like he had planned to redraw the whole book, you know, so the book would have like a real cohesion to it. And he abandoned that after I forget the number, but let's just say he penciled like 40 pages or something, you know.
Yeah.
He penciled a lot before he just gave up on it. But and the other, you know, Chet, I'm such a huge fan of Chet. I was like begging him to send me Xeroxes of these penciled pages, and he just laughed. You know? He won't do it. But
just to tease you.
Yeah, but he, you know, his new Christmas card is great.
Oh yeah, I got one of those.
It's the Santa drawn like it's a Fearless
Fosdick story with Santa Claus in the role of Fearless Fosdick.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You have to show me it when I come over, Colin.
It's very weird.
Beautiful cartooning, though.
Yes,
that's my favorite.
Well, he might also have been something of a victim of his own success, because the Louis Riel collections generated a lot of interest, and so he spent a lot of time traveling and talking about that.
It's true. I've Yeah, Chet's got a good life. He's a very happy guy. You know, he lived the dream that I want to live, which is he managed to buy a small little condo and like escape the pressure of having to come up with rent every month.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's got a very nice life. He's a happy guy.
And he wants to destroy our world.
Yeah, he's so anti-relationship and marriage. It's hilarious.
We've been exchanging correspondence.
Not email.
No, letters.
Yeah. I think Chet's the only guy I know that doesn't have an email address.
Him and Dave Sim.
Yeah. Although I hear Dave Sim's blogging all the time.
What he does is someone posts it for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
He actually has someone that does all the work for him.
He types it out? He has a slave?
I think he has an inkwell and pen and...
Wow. No, you think so? Really?
No.
No. That guy always types. He's too prolific with his writing.
And look what happened to him.
Well, I always knew Sim could not be silenced. You know, after the way he's written, apart from the comic, just his like essays and stuff.
Yeah,
I knew he had to keep writing in some format. But
I mean, he was very prolific, but he went crazy. So,
Clyde, he could hear you. I don't know what you're talking about.
Does he listen? I don't think he listens to the radio.
No,
so.
I know. But I think this is Canadian, though. This is in Canada, so it's not off his radar.
Yeah.
Oh, do you think he knows about us?
Yeah, probably. Maybe. I don't know.
I wouldn't say he went crazy. In some ways, I think Sim went the best course that he possibly could have. You know, in terms of where he could have ended up or how he could have... I don't know. He's...
What, women literally don't know the difference between people and animals?
He's an interesting case. Somebody should make a film about him.
They should.
They should. That's true.
The next Crumb film would, you know, would be about Sim. It would be great. But and he's a very honest, forthcoming guy, you know?
I like him.
Of course.
His opinions are so extreme.
I know.
Well, you got to respect honesty, right?
You do.
Now, enough Dave Sim.
Dave Sim could be a whole separate show.
Yeah, no, it's I could just get everyone's opinion on Dave Sim and have a show right there, correct?
If this world from you will hold, I'll let you learn it as well. And you have to get along with me, Jabal. You see me blow your head wide, I ain't been a lot of fun. Take your burden to the Lord and give it down. Give it down, give it down. Take your burden to the Lord and give it down. If you trust you never doubt, he will surely bring it out. Take your burden to the Lord and give it down. If your body suffers pain,
give it down, give it down, give it down, give it down.
baby, you'll take your burden to them now.
So, when did you start getting the interest in the olden day strips, the stuff like Frank King, things like that? Was that kind of in Toronto?
Kind of like I kind of showed this in Spen. I mean, it's just being around Seth. You know, Seth's interest in things was and is voracious. Like mm-hmm. that guy would get on these kicks where he'd start collecting. You know, if it wasn't matchbook covers, it was circus memorabilia, or like he would just pick something and just collect the hell out of it for a few weeks. You know, and this is even before eBay was around.
Yeah.
You know, somehow he'd find everything. It was amazing. Very much like his character Jonah in Wimbledon Green. Do you remember this?
Oh yes.
The character, like, do you remember when he like drives around and he unloads his the trunk of his car, and he's picked up all this junk at flea markets. Do you remember that panel, that scene?
Not that particular panel, but...
He's very much like that. Yeah. I mean, he's always, like, scoured places endlessly. And so I was exposed to a lot just being around him. And in some ways, I was just looking for something to focus my energy, my attention on, in terms of collecting. Because I've always wanted... I have the same collecting bug that he does, but I just don't...
It
I don't like acquiring stuff. Like, he's drowning in books and possessions, you know? I've always wanted to be a minimalist, but I don't know. I'm babbling again.
Not babbling.
But I just chose Frank King's Gasoline Alley because it was a great strip, and I never dreamed it would be collected. I never thought it would be reprinted, and it seemed like the perfect strip to start collecting. And, you know, I funneled thousands and thousands of dollars buying all these strips, and then God knows how many hours gluing them into books, you know, all for nothing, basically, because when Chris Oliveira started reprinting them, you know, I basically just handed over a bunch of, you know, all my scrapbooks to him, and I just said, here, like, you know, and I think he had to tear them apart to shoot from them.
Aww.
At least the dailies. But the thing is, I didn't want to keep them anyway, because once his books came out, his books were smaller than my scrapbooks were,
mm-hmm.
and I would have to keep his books anyway. So I didn't want to keep both. You know, it's all about space.
Yeah,
I've always lived in one tiny little room, and so I've always wanted to minimize everything anyway.
No, I wish I could be a minimalist.
But it's ironic that I spent all that money on all those strips, and if I didn't, they never would have got reprinted by Chris.
Mm-hmm.
But I still regret doing it, because if I had just kept that money in the bank, it would have doubled by now. You know? I mean, we're talking like 15 grand easily.
Wow.
You know?
But you've got, like, pretty much the complete run.
I've got a very good run. I think I'm missing maybe, you know, less than 30 Sundays.
Wow.
And, as far as the dailies go, I'm just missing like the last few years from the 60s. Whenever I think King died in 67, and I'm missing the last few years like running up to that. But
was he still doing it then? I thought he had someone else doing it after the mid 50s.
He had Bill Perry doing the Sunday from 51 onward, late 51, I think. But he did the daily as long as he was signing his name to the daily. He was responsible for it.
Okay.
I don't think he had assistance on the daily. I'm not sure.
That's a question for Jeep here.
Yeah. But as I get older, you know, I'm at 44, you know, I feel like I'm probably around the midpoint of my life. I can feel, you know, time is going by, and I don't know. Life doesn't seem long enough to, like, you know, to read all these strips. You know, you got the complete Dick Tracy coming out now, and Lure for Nanny will be out very soon. The Peanuts books. I've got a ton of Little Abner. Like, I've got all the Little Abner dailies after Kitchen Sink stopped. You know, so after, you know, from like 1962 onward, I still have all these Little Abner dailies I need to glue into books. I'm just not doing it. But I don't know. Life just seems short.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get depressing.
No. Well, I find it just like going back to the whole getting into the minimalist Buddhist philosophy stuff. I think that's quite interesting. Where it's like kind of, I guess, that kind of introspective, where you kind of look at where you're at and kind of look at what is around you.
Yeah.
So,
but at the same point, though, I'm not. You know, as I'm reading, you know, as I'm not completely holding still or meditating,
yeah,
or reflecting as much as I should, because I feel like I'm, you know, as I read these books, I'm still like,
there's a part of you that it's like you kind of, that collector part, and that, you know, it's quite the same with me, where I've, you know, a ferocious collector, you know, and I want to give up this stuff. It's like, I love this stuff, I can't let go of it, like, this is part,
yeah,
of who I am. I've got, you know, some pretty crazy stuff that no one will ever find again.
Sure. And like, sitting, you know, sitting right in front of me, you know, next to these Buddhist books, I've got, you know, the last, you know, Looney Tunes set volume 5 that just came out, you know. And just the other night I was like, it's almost like work, you know. I'm like, I gotta watch these fucking cartoons now. Like, I didn't buy these DVDs just to stick them away, you know.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's one disc, it's, you know, 15 Bob Clampett cartoons in a row, and I love Bob Clampett, you know. And so, like, I've got to, like, make time and go out of my way to, like, to watch these things. And, you know, also next to this, you know, I'm always, like, reading books, you know, just books I haven't read yet, you know. I'm sitting next, you know, I've got Ayn Rand's a book here of her stuff that I haven't read that I want to check out. I haven't even read Atlas Shrugged. I don't know if I even will.
Oh no, you're going to turn into Steve Ditko right away.
But I want, you know, I want to be informed. I want to be, you know, I have to have read this stuff. Last night I watched Young Mr. Lincoln by John Ford. You know, starring Henry Fonda. Do you know this film?
No.
Yeah, it's one of Henry Fonda playing a young Lincoln. What more do you want? You know, it's like, I've always wanted to see it, and I did. So recently I just watched all The Sopranos, all 7 seasons.
Oh,
that killed me.
You don't have to watch them all at once.
I do. I do have to watch them all at once.
I'm the same.
Really?
Yeah, my dad had a really hard time watching a lot at once. He'd maybe watch one in a night.
Yeah.
Is it just so, I don't know, brutal?
I'm obsessive, you know?
Yeah.
If it's here, I'll watch 4 or 5 episodes in a row until I can't take it anymore.
Yeah. My girlfriend and I are the same way. We get a new TV show we're into, and we'll sit and watch the whole thing.
Yep.
You know?
Okay.
And then look outside and go, wow, it's dark out.
I just watched, and I don't say this proudly, but I wanted to, Andy Griffith season 1. I rented that and watched it. And I don't know what else.
You'll probably have to cleanse yourself by reading Drew Friedman's old strip.
There's something else I just watched. Oh, what was it?
Hopefully not Full House.
No, not Full House. Never Full House.
I just got a Sergio Leone box set.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with this stuff.
Good, Bad, and the Ugly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
A lot of Italian guys pretending to be Mexicans.
No. Yesterday I was in a store. I was agonizing over an Ozzy and Harriet DVD collection. 38 episodes. 38! And it was $9.99.
What?
And I was like, part of me wants it, but part of me doesn't.
What are you going to do with an Ozzy and Harriet collection?
I just want to watch it. I just wanted to watch it. I didn't want to necessarily own it.
Yeah.
But, I knew if I watched it, I would get rid of it when I was finished.
Yeah.
But still, it's a crappy show, but I love Ozzy I love Ozzy himself. I love the way he kind of talks, and I don't know.
You'll just have to start multitasking.
What do you mean start? I'm trying now.
Oh.
I multitask constantly.
Uh-huh. So you watch television and draw?
I don't watch television at all. Except for DVDs.
Well, that's what I meant. You watch DVDs and
working? When I watch DVDs, I give them my full attention.
Oh.
I wear headphones, and I don't blink.
Kind of like in Clockwork Orange. And have
exactly. I really do. I mean, if you're going to watch it, watch it. You know? But, you know, last night I was working. I was working on these paintings, and I was listening to some Howard Stern on cassette that a friend had taped for me. So, you know, from some of Howard Stern's radio show.
Paintings?
I was working on these paintings. They're gifts.
Oh.
It's Christmas time.
What medium are you working in?
Just acrylic. One's a belated gift for Adrian's wedding. Adrian Tomine.
He was on a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Excellent.
Good.
He's a chatty guy.
That's great.
And he came by for a signing in town. We're pretty thorough with our repertoire of alternative cartoonists that we've
What city are you in again?
We're in Vancouver.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard for you to get there.
Hmm?
You live there, right, Colin?
Yeah.
Oh, indeed, yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Vancouver's a big part of my comics.
Sorry, I'm switching phones.
When are you going to come up?
I don't know. I have no plans, but, if anyone pays my way, I'll go anywhere. If Jordan Corley had arranged for me to sign somewhere there, I would have been there.
Yeah.
But I went to Chicago, New York. I don't know.
Well, hopefully one day we'll get you up here for something.
Yeah. I've been to Vancouver. When Chester lived there, I was there for like 2 months once.
Well,
no, maybe 1 month.
That's Strathcona.
All I know is I wore out my welcome.
Well,
Chester was living with Sukian at the time. And Chester was like, stay as long as you want. But Sukian was like, when's he leaving?
Well, I think we're at our time allotment.
Are we at the halfway point yet?
I think we're at the endway point.
Okay.
I really want to thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
No sweat.
Joe, we're both big fans of your work.
Thanks. I feel like I haven't said anything I wanted to say.
Is there anything you want to say?
No.
No.
Oh, come on.
MySpace me.
There we go.
It's so pathetic. I find myself saying that to like everybody as I leave them. When I meet people, and I want them to stay in touch with me, and I don't want to give out my email address, I hear myself shouting, MySpace me. And I'm cringing as I hear it, because it sounds so pathetic.
We're on LiveJournal.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that.
It's okay. Yeah, it's Colin doesn't even know what MySpace is.
LiveJournal. There's Facebook. The hell with these things. I can only.
You know what? It's okay. They all they're gonna do is take away more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I kind of at points wish I didn't have a computer at home, let alone the internet.
Yeah.
Other times I'm fascinated to look at horrible things online. So.
Well,
it's a catch-22.
On MySpace, I just posted a blog recently where I mentioned a book on meditation, and I'll plug that book again because it's really good. I really recommend it, called Seeking the Heart of Wisdom by Joseph Goldstein and Jack Kornfield. It's a great book.
There we go.
Seeking the Heart of Wisdom. I'm reading it right now, along with another Eckhart Tolle book, A New Earth, which I just started last night, and it looks really good.
So a couple of reading recommendations to end off with.
What are you reading in the way of comics?
God. I seem to be reading less and less comics. Popeye Volume 2 just came out, but I own all the other Popeye books that Fantagraphics put out.
Mm-hmm.
So I have read all of the Popeye stuff by Seagar, but I read a lot of Popeye 2 the other night when I got it.
They do such a good job putting it together, though.
It's gorgeous. It's such a great strip.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I still love Jeffrey Brown's book.
I'm
constantly quoting the Incredible Change Bots.
You know, I haven't actually read that yet.
It's
I'm a
great.
Huge Jeffrey Brown fan.
I mean this in the best way when I say it's so stupid. But I'm quoting it all the time for my own amusement.
I think, can't you get a membership card from him too and stuff?
I know he'll do the original sketches for like $20 or something. There's an ad in the back of the book.
Yeah, I gotta pick that book up.
But I do feel like I read less and less comics, though. I don't know why. I'm just kind of not. It's sort of like I've just been taking a break from comics, I think, for years now.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happened with music. Like, I literally stopped listening to music. I haven't listened to any music, really, in years. I'm just kind of like, I mean, I am listening to it sometimes, but I don't care about it, you know? I don't buy it or care about it the same way I used to. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll have to send you some ink studs to listen to.
Thank you.
You got a CD player?
Yes, I do.
Excellent. Well, I guess if you watch DVDs, you kind of have to.
Yeah, in my CD player right now is a bunch of... my ex-girlfriend Maggie made me this tape, a mixed CD of what she considers the mellow music of Weezer. It's more like demos and acoustic things by Rivers, Cuomo. They're all very listenable. I like them. I like them because they're all soft and, you know, it's easy for me. I don't like hard, loud music in my room.
He's a good songwriter.
I'm a real wimp. But, yeah, and then before this, I was listening to some doo-wop. I like Dionne. I'm not ashamed to say it.
Dionne Warwick?
Dionne and the Belmonts.
No. We played some doo-wop for Spain when he was on.
Really?
Yeah. Like I said, we like it.
Part of me is like, don't tell... I'm embarrassed I'm even saying this. Like, don't tell Seth I've been listening to doo-wop. he'll just shake his head and say, like, poor Joe.
What's wrong with doo-wop?
Ask Seth. He'll tell you. He'll have lots to say about it.
He might listen to the show, you know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Well, he probably does, actually.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you need a computer? Is this only on the computer, or is this on the air?
It's on the air, but you can
it's
get
archived.
It's archived. I have a complete... about 100 interviews so far.
Jeez.
With the show. Yeah, like, you name the cartoonist at this point, and they've made an appearance on. Even Ralph Steadman.
I remember him. I remember you mentioned him. God, yeah. I wish I was better. This sounds...
Oh, you're great, Joe.
No. let's do, like, 10 of these, and then I'll pick the best one.
And you'll edit it together.
Oh, I hate the fact that you only get one shot at this, and then it's there. It's sitting there archived.
Well, we'll...
A nightmare.
Tell you what. We'll have you back on.
Thank you.
Sometimes what we do is we do kind of topic-specific shows. So, like, Chris and Ware and Jeet here came on to talk about Frank King's work and stuff. So think about a cartoonist that would interest you as a topic. And
I can talk about anybody. I have no life. Call me once a week. We'll do this every week for a while.
I don't think I can get away with that. Okay, thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you, Robin.
And I will send you some info. And actually, send me some more song picks, because this is a longer interview, so I have more room for music. Awesome. Thank you.
Jug band stuff.
Pardon?
Do you have any Yahoo CDs there?
You know who else asked for Yahoo?
Who?
Seth.
I was collecting them before Seth was.
Oh, there we go.
But Yahoo's got they have two really great CDs of jug band music called Ruckus Juice and Chitlins. Ruckus Juice and Chitlins.
Well, I gotta write
this. One and two.
Ruckus
Juice
and Chitlins. That's awesome.
Sounds appetizing.
Chitlins. They're both jug band compilations, and they're both fantastic. Just grab anything off of those, that's what I say.
I'll find them.
Or the Bohunks. Anything by the Bohunks. The Little Rascals music.
How do you spell that?
You know, I tried to find them. I couldn't find it, because that was one of the things you sent me in a list. I think
they also did, the Bohunks also did the music of Laurel Hardy. There's two volumes of that on CD. They're both great.
Laurel and Hardy. Okay. I'm going to hunt this stuff down.
Or the Beatles. The Beatles anthology stuff.
That can't be that hard to find.
I really like demos. Or Jonathan Richman. Still my favorite.
Oh, yeah? The early Modern Lovers stuff? Or?
I love Jonathan. I love Surrender to Jonathan and Jonathan Goes Country.
Okay.
Wimpy, sensitive white guy music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's great stuff.
Yeah.
Fabulous stuff.
Wait, do either of you know when the new Little Orphan Annie volume's coming out?
Oh, I have no idea.
No, sorry.
I don't even know who's publishing it.
Dean Mullaney is putting it out. I think he put out he does the Dick Tracy's and the...
Oh, IDW?
Yes.
I
can't wait. I'm counting the days for this Annie Volume 1.
Yeah, you know who would be the perfect person to ask about that?
Is Gene. Here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's what he's doing his doctorate on.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to say hi.
I know Gene. Gene's great. His name came up yesterday at lunch.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And as well as the joke. Like, every time his name comes up, somebody says, yes, I did eat here. Really bad.
We never thought of that.
C'est la vie. C'est la vie.
Anyway. Okay.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Nice talking to you.
And I hope you have a pleasant bike ride.
Give me a ring if you're ever coming down to L.A.
Oh, I will. You never know.
Sure, if I need a place to crash.
No, not that. The small room. I'm not allowed to have people over.
Oh.
I'm really not. My roommate, I live with a woman who kind of discourages me from even bringing people in. And that's fine.
Oh, don't worry. I know.
It's not a hangout joint. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know plenty of people in L.A.
Thank you. Well, I could hook you up with people, too.
But oh, good.
not to end on such an awkward note.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, the crown death. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lordy. I know he's in corners. Yet the wages of sin are done. The gift of God, eternal life. Daddy, he said you're rocking a weary land. Shelling the time of storm. Okay. Amen. Hello, little in the morning, Lord, how much is it? What about to save me, Lord? Oh.